Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first two questions related to a little bit more technical, and I think if the FSB and National Treasury wants to give a bit more details, that they will do so, obviously. In terms of the question about the reinsurance, how are people spreading themselves, etc., I do want to make the point that they... obviously, we're talking only about reinsurers in this case, not insurers. And reinsurers usually are global companies who spread the risks in different territories so that they can provide reinsurance covers for insurers who have a lot of losses in a specific area. There may be a hailstorm or catastrophe or an earthquake or whatever. So because the reinsurers cover different risks in different areas, they can actually carry that risk and help the insurer pay out those claims. So, yes. So it is important that they are allowed to do that business because it gives further a safeguard for the insurers to meet their risks when there are big events and catastrophic events that's centered in a specific region. So the clause that we are talking about, or the provision that we are talking about, is the proviso currently, which we don't know whether it was intended or not, for the reinsurers to be able to do business, continue to do business in the rest of Africa without actually getting authority for it, because they are usually globally global companies as well, and they would also be dealt with in terms of those approved jurisdictions where they're coming from, of which the FSB and the Prudential Authority will have a list. So I hope that answers that question. As I said, it is important for the sustainability of the insurers financially that the reinsurers spread the risks and ultimately, obviously, the policyholders then. So in terms of the agricultural sector products, what we are suggesting is that if it can't go in the microinsurance framework, because we are talking specifically about index-type products, which I will just explain a little bit later, about, then we can actually just include it in a list, in the list of products, in the chapter at the end of the bill, and this will just be index-related agricultural insurance products. So we have started the conversations, and we just say let's continue those conversations and see where we can add it in the bill. Because in terms of our conversations with National Treasury, the Department of Agriculture, and also the World Bank and so on, who we are working on a potential framework which would assist with small business development, small farmer development, empowering those farmers, maybe becoming commercial farmers, etc. And the types of products that are affordable in that regard are not necessarily your normal individual insurance or your multi-peril crop insurance product, because those are very expensive, and that's one of the reasons why most commercial farmers don't even buy those products. This also provides huge risks for the insurance sector. So an index-related product would, for example, be an area yield crop insurance product where there's a lot of research done in a specific area, and if the yield in that area is normally this much and a specific smallholder farmer's yield is less, then he will be compensated for that because of drought factors or not enough rainfall or whatever. It could also work for livestock, which is also looking at pasture types of index insurance. So we just need to allow for those kind of products so that we can enable the products that could assist in an affordable way, especially for smallholder farmers. This is a new thing for us, but I think we must as a country go there, and certainly we want to go there. So we're just saying we must allow for those kind of products.
Can I have a follow-up on this? I just want to make the presenter aware that in terms of the lists and indices, those are dealt with through the government guiding notes. Because here, that's why I asked a specific question, that do you want a specific formulation that will cover the agricultural product in the legislation, because there's a difference between where the guidance notes are made and where the legislation is made. So I thought you wanted it captured in the legislation, because government will give those directives through these guidance notes. So in terms of the text as it stands, how it should cover, that's what it was. Because we cannot discuss products as part of the legislative framework.
Yes, I think the FSB and Treasury must correct me if I'm wrong, but there is a list of products, business classes, not products, business classes in the insurance bill, and we are just saying that maybe we should consider including it there. Our comments related not to this bill specifically, which is just a framework, that is why we said we support the framework, but we were asking for consultation, proper consultation, as we've had before, which we know we will have going forward, that in maybe in the further kind of subordinate legislation where these things can be stipulated, that we just give attention to it. So it's really just saying we want to continue the consultative process so that we can put these things in where they fit best. Happy with that.
Okay, who's next? Yeah.
The question about the micro financial inclusion. Yes. Mr. Chairman, we have been advocating for microinsurance legislation for a long time. We're very happy when in 2011 the microinsurance framework was released by National Treasury. There were several work streams established. We were involved in creating standards for products. I was personally involved in one of those meetings together with the FSB and National Treasury. We looked at the fit and proper requirements and see how best to still protect customers while, being proportionate in terms of not creating barriers to access. The licensing conditions, as Jonathan has said earlier, are also different related to microinsurance in terms of the fact that there will only be 3 million rand capital requirements, and we were very much involved in those discussions as well as allowing a period of meeting that. So although nothing is perfect and we still need to, work on those details going forward, we believe that it will at least create an enabling environment in which products can be made available that are appropriate, which is important, as well as more affordable. So it will definitely help. It will not be a 100% guarantee that things will change, but we believe that will help. Also, it will create new entrepreneurs. There are lower barriers of entry there in terms of that. And so we are hoping that those entrepreneurs will enter the market on more simple, less risky products and then be able to develop into bigger markets. I also believe that the proportionality of the legislation in the insurance bill does allow for people to enter, although we agree that the proportionality should be such that it is not another barrier to entry for companies. So in terms of lesser requirements, financial capital, for example, related to less complex products, I think that will that is one of the things that we are.
Can we move on? Just to note, Democracy wasn't late. She was at another meeting, so she's very angry with me, rightly so. It's fine. She can come in when she wants to. The point is, for those of you who don't understand, we have a rule or a norm. And until you instruct me to change it otherwise, if a person comes late and the issues are covered, it's not fair to those of us who come on time. But in this case, she also has to leave at 12:30, which is a matter we need to address, because this committee members are being deployed by Parliament's powers that be, who are senior to me. Okay, and then they say, go and do this. Pinky has also been taken off to another committee. Makosi had to serve in the SABC ad hoc committee, right, while we're dealing with the financial sector. So I think, Pule, you and I have to go and speak to the powers that be. You can't have this committee having four times the load of every other committee, and then our members get extracted to go and do other parliamentary work. Can we put that on the agenda? We go and speak to the Speaker and the Chief Whip as well. Okay, but Makosi, okay, fine, you can come in when you want, right? I don't know why you're getting so mad, because no one, I mean, here I'm accused of allowing people just to speak. So you can come in when you want, and she has to leave at 12:30, so we'll prioritize you, but she's got another parliamentary thing. Now, Floyd will put his hand up and say, well, I'm a Chief Whip for my party, well, we'll prioritize you too, right, if you want to. Right, having said that, over then to Asisa.
Thank you, Chair. The first question, I think, was around the approval of the audit partner. I think we're saying we obviously understand that the external audit firm approval is important, but that also having to get the Prudential Authority to approve the audit partner is regulatory overkill, because there are already professional standards for the auditors, and we think that they would be suitably qualified, and it can lead to unnecessary delays and problems, because let's say an auditor leaves the firm and then the insurer won't have an auditor until the new one's been approved by the authorities. So it's just the practicalities really around that. Then the other one is the bill just retaining the status quo. Definitely not. I mean, I think there's been a long time for the industry to adapt to the changes, but the bill introduces significant changes. The capital requirements are very different and affect the insurers differently. So really, put simply, insurers with higher risks have to hold more capital. So it depends on their mix of business, but a lot of them will have to hold more capital than they currently do. So it's not advantageous to many of the insurers in that respect, and it also introduces much more detailed and stringent governance and oversight requirements. And then, as Saeed has mentioned, it does also introduce, it facilitates and enables the regulator to put in place a microinsurance standard, which means for the new entrants who want to provide microinsurance, much lower solvency and capital requirements and other prudential requirements. So we believe that that will assist. And then obviously for the customers to also almost promote more trust in the industry through regulated kind of microinsurance products. And the transformation, I mean, we've definitely heard you and the committee, and we are gathering all the facts and figures to present to you on the 14th of March. And I just wanted to say on the funeral insurance, at the briefing there were some comments around or some concerns around funeral insurance and whether it's paid out more than once. I just want to say that CISA members do pay out in funeral insurance policies. If someone holds a few insurance policies, they will pay those out. There are different reasons why people want to have more than one funeral insurance policy. I mean, it can be easier and quicker. They're paid out very quickly, and it can be easier and quicker to obtain than traditional life insurance. And it also has extra benefits, not just the funeral. Some pay out for a few months, a fixed amount of money, and also groceries, and there are different benefits. So there are reasons why someone holds more than one, and they are paid out. I think that's all. Thanks, Chair.
Excuse Cal, there you are.
The first question was about which regulation I was referring to. I referred to the pension fund regulation, which is known as Regulation 28. And then the other one was the Companies Act, and basically what I was saying about that was that both these pieces of legislation highlight the centrality of human rights considerations, even though these are legislation that regulate business. And that's what we were saying should be done in this bill as well. The second question was about license conditions, and I think it was mainly just about transformation, which we haven't touched on because we feel it's a well-discussed point and trusted that it will be covered. The third question was how often do we consult with Treasury and what is our comment? I'm not sure what exactly this question is asking. We have consulted with Treasury when we were when we did our submissions on the ratification of the BRICS Bank. I will say that they were difficult to access and unforthcoming, but we are also very new in business and human rights, and our engagements with them have been limited, and maybe this was a once-off experience. And then I think the last question was covered by what the chair said, and we welcome that invitation, and we will submit more specific amendments regarding what we actually wording that we want to be incorporated into the bill.
This committee is, unless you disagree, requiring you to meet with CALS within 14 days. Okay? Sit with them, talk to them. We won't process this bill unless you do so. You talk too much to industry, not enough to labor, not enough to NGOs and so on. Never mind that they might have something that you in the government, and we in Parliament actually, to be fair, because we do feel this abstract. It's fine. Hear them. They're an important stakeholder on this insurance industry. Human rights issues are fundamentally important, right? And so meet them within 14 days. Any problems with that? No. Can we move on then to BBC, Black Business Council? Fellow, where are you?
No, I've got my energy.
Okay. Please go ahead. Introduce yourselves and can we start? You've got 15 minutes.
If you only give me one...
From you, have you got a hard copy or is this the only submission you've got?
We have a hard copy, but I can talk through. It's only two, three slides.
Oh, okay.
Don't take long. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Let me start by thanking you for giving the BBC the opportunity to share a few things on this bill. Firstly, I want to support the objectives of the insurance bill, which aims obviously to protect the policyholders, and some of those points I think that are critical is that it facilitates monitoring and preserving of the safety and soundness of the insurers. The enhancement and protection of policyholders and potential policyholders, increased access to insurance for all South Africans. I think what is only worrying for us, I think it has been echoed a number of times, is that it doesn't at all look to accommodate the transformation of the financial sector as envisaged in various codes, including the financial sector code for BBBE. One of the most important things that we have noticed, in fact, looking at our member organization, as you know, the majority of them is small, medium, and micro enterprises. If you look at the provision of 18.5, you know, under financial implication of the bill, it states that For example, the implementation of SEM will result in additional costs to the insurance industry. And this cost will be offset by the benefits described, which are not even properly explained, although these costs are more difficult even to measure, which is a great concern. And if you look at these costs, at the end, this cost will be passed to the consumers in the medium term. And they might be perceived to be very small, but because of the capacity of those small entities, these costs are quite huge, because you don't look at only the insurance at the top level, but there's the entire value chain. You have also what we call the brokers that are in between, which the majority happens to be black because of the capacity of the cost and capital required in that particular aspect. And now we look at various some of those costs, for example, things like the cost of reviewing agreements, the cost of using tracing agents in order to cleanse the data, the external auditing costs, which are really quite huge, because as you know that FSB has a very quite stringent accreditation on this audit companies, and the worst is this, accredited FSB auditors. In fact, the majority of them are white, which is quite worrying. Now, the other thing is, we look at the commission structures. As you look at the bill, will be tremendously reduced if you look at the brokers of what the commissions they're going to earn, which in a nutshell, the adequacy for them to make profit is going to be very minimal. Literally, they're going to be wiped out of business because of the profitability for those brokers in between. The other thing is, we are of the belief that this bill is based on European law, and is very scientific. What it doesn't do, it doesn't say what are the situations in particular in South Africa, what does the market look like, so that we can have practical circumstances of the South African context as opposed to UK base, which is really a critical issue. The small black business, as I mentioned, we see a huge potential of these big insurance companies because of the results of this high cost. There's going to be a lot of takeovers of these books that are lying with these brokers because they cannot survive. And the capital adequacy, I think, has already been mentioned, that it also becomes a much more of a barrier, allowing by not reducing the minimum very affordable capital adequacy that the black SMMEs can be able to afford. So in a nutshell, we are saying the bill, I think it has been mentioned many times, we don't want to really spend a lot of time on that. I think comrade, my leader Shibambo, has really summarized it quite well. All that information we have to say, there's a lot of transformation required in this industry in particular, and we can't allow the status quo to remain.
Did you say comrade?
My leader, my learned...
comrade.
Okay.
No, I just wanted to make sure, because that's our literature, really.
Okay.
Comrade belongs to us.
Okay.
All right.
My learned... Pule, teach you politics now, you want to...
Here we go.
Fine, Floyd, you have a right to reply.
Yeah.
And I'll fall asleep while you do it, but go ahead.
You must respect leadership, well, you call me SAS of the revolution.
Okay.
All right, Tandi, do you want to reply to Pule and Shivambu?
Today I'm not in the mood to play.
Okay. Who else would like to reply? Sifiso, you must slam Shivambu. This is Parliament, colleagues. Carry on. Makosi is mad with the chairperson, so she decided not to talk, as if we don't treasure every word, because who knows the sector, the ANC, better than she does. So Makosi is not one to hit out always. Okay, you're not mad at me. All right. So, no, you're not allowed, because can we just slam each other and get it over with? Anything else? Okay, fine. Okay, Tandi?
Hello, Chair, I'm not asking questions. I want... I missed the name because what we used to sell. I want us to agree in principle that the matters that the BBC is raising, it's the matter for the 14th of March. We have set aside a date to specifically deal with matters.
We're going to come back to all of that. Let them finish their inputs. They haven't finished, Andy. We'll come back, my friend.
Oh, I thought you were saying my...
No. It was just that there were these interruptions, and before I get accused of being repressive and so on and denying people their right to speak, I said, go for it. Go for it. Now no one wants to speak. Right, fine. Can we get back to the issues? Thank you very much. You finish, Stella, you want to speak?
Yeah, for the record, that was Mr. George Sibulela, is the Secretary General of the Black Business Council. But
can I plead with you? SG, there's only one SG in the country, okay? I mean, you're causing a lot of confusion here. Now we've got another SG of the BBC and so on.
It's unconstitutional.
The
United Nations.
Silla, I'm going to take you to the Constitutional Court this time. You have no right to use that term. Having said that, fellow, can you go on, please?
No, but basically, we are really learning a lot through this. And as we do more research, particularly what Treasury refers to as the Twin Peaks, we are trying to be the best in the world. If you look at the Twin Peaks, there are only two countries in the world that are implementing that in full, and that's Australia and the Netherlands. Before we can even transform this country, we are doing so many other things. So we saw what's happening with the Prudential Authority and all the authorities that are in this act. But the people who are going to give you a better experience of what they experience every day is the CEOs of the four companies. The cost implications, the difficulty of operations. When we leave now with the Secretary General, we are going to meet the three directors of ASISA. We say, let's not rely on our lawmakers. Black people are only 1% of the market, whether you like it or not. Unless you do something, we are going to have a revolution in this country. So we are going to see them and talk to them. But also we rely on this parliament. As we promised you during the FICA bill, we will come back here every week. Despite the cause, when you refuse to talk to us, Honorable Shupambo, we shall insist to come and talk to you so that you support this revolution. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Floyd is not a comrade anymore, I see. Okay, Pula, are you happy? Can you record your happiness?
No, I'm just checking if they are looking for votes as well.
Floyd, do you have to respond to this? You have a right, but do you have to use it?
No, you know, Chair, I think we must note the nuance of the Black Business Council's presentation, because they are making a presentation minus the ANC's professional forum, which they came with in the past meeting. And they were then conflated and missed the point in terms of what should happen. But I think that there can be Secretary General of BBC. There can be a degree of sophistication in the manner in which you recommend what is to be done. Like, identify the clauses there. We are giving you an opportunity.
Floyd, we're coming to the question time, to be fair.
To then begin to say that these are the transformative clauses that we can insert into the legislation so that we're able to then look into that.
I was going to say that too, but can we come to that later, please? Who's next? You are right, Floyd. I was going to say the same thing. Come on. Who's next? Next is PGC Group. Where are you? Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Okay. No. Whilst we're trying to put up the presentation, let me just correct that. We submitted this presentation as PGC. However, over the weekend and in preparation for this submission, we have met as the only four black insurance companies in this country, who constitute less than 1%. In fact, we wrote 1%. So it should at least appear. If it was less than 1%, I don't think in the slide it would have appeared. So we tried to put it as 1%. So we have now become, we're presenting this as a joint presentation by the four. The four are the Workers Life, which is a wholly owned PGC company, workers company. Then you have Union Life, which is a workers company, Nurse Life, Bopilo, who are both private companies, but owned entirely by black people of this country. Let me thank the opportunity that has been granted to us. And in us presenting today, I will jump some of the slides because I would rather prefer that we have a lot of engagement than the slides because our presentation speaks for itself. However, there are some critical points that I would want to emphasize on. And after I've finished my presentation, the three CEOs will take the questions from the House. This submission is being presented today. It's 22 years since democracy. And as having said earlier, that only 1% of the ownership of insurance in this country is in the hands of black people, the indigenous black people. My hype was slightly reduced when I heard the chairman saying today that this bill is not in the throes of being approved. There's still a long process. But as other CEOs will respond to you, we are already in this regime. We are living on all these rules that you heard today from Treasury. These are fully implemented. This is what we'll be talking to you about, because this is like we're discussing something that is already happening. And here it's here for the rubber stamping or the formality, probably at the end of the year, whenever the committee feels like it's the right time to approve. The whole question of microinsurance, which is listed at that point in my first in the joint submission that I'm explaining to you, will be explained again by the other CEOs here. Because effectively, in my view, will be placed into squalor. That's where, in fact, black people belong to squalor. If you really don't want them here, you must look for some dungeon and dump them there to become what you call micro-insurance. That's where they belong, basically. In the pretext of opening the market for micro and SMMEs. That is our submission today. Our starting point is that South African insurance industry is well advanced, and it is praised the world over for its stability and was resilient during the 2008 financial crisis. Its main fundamental problem is transformation. We submit that we shouldn't be on an overdrive fixing something that has not been broken. Our main preoccupation should be to fix what has been broken. That is transformation in the insurance industry. Our submission should not be misconstrued for being anti-regulatory. Whilst we do have serious reservations about the same regime, which is being implemented as we speak, particularly for small black insurance companies, we believe that if Parliament agrees with us that this industry has to be transformed, we will automatically revisit those aspects of SAM that have propensity of being barriers to transformation. I would like to jump the slide that talks about the core submission, and I'll jump the preamble of our constitution, which is well known by...
Can I suggest you're not under the... Can members agree on this? You're not under the pressure of 15 minutes, because you're representing four structures, right?
Yes.
And it's not as if we hear small emerging entrepreneurs often in this parliament. So I don't think it must be, unless members disagree, you can have some latitude, 20 minutes, slightly longer. It's not a big deal. Has anybody got a problem with that? So we'll give you some latitude. It's only fair, because on the other side is big industry, and parliament is not an instrument to hear big industry alone. So you can take even 25 minutes if you want.
Thank you very much. Because I was trying to jump the slides in trying to accommodate the 15 minutes. I will, however, jump the preamble of the Constitution, which is well understood by everyone else in this country as well as the members of Parliament. the unconstitutional elements of the bill. That's where I would like to get into. We submit that the insurance bill is unconstitutional to the extent that it fails to incorporate express transformation objectives. Without such incorporation, the insurance bill will not pass the constitutional muster if challenged in the constitutional grounds at a later stage. Without such incorporation, Parliament will fail in its constitutional obligation to respect, protect, promote, and fulfill the rights in the Bill of Rights. Further, any steps taken by Parliament to pass this insurance bill in its current form will be ineffective and unreasonable and render the insurance bill unconstitutional obligation. I'll jump the constitutional mandate and the decision of the Constitutional Court, which I would leave to the members to see on their own. The promotion of equality, I think we're trying to delve into the space which the previous presenters raised. The promotion of equality and prevention of an unfair discrimination act of 2000. The preamble of the promotion of equality and prevention of unfair discrimination act of 2000 states that the consolidation of democracy in our country requires the eradication of social, economic inequalities, especially those that are systemic in nature, which were generated in our history by colonialism, apartheid, and patriarchy, and which brought pain and suffering to the great majority of our people. Although significant progress has been made in the restructuring and transformation of our society and its institutions, systemic inequalities and unfair discrimination remains deeply embedded in social structures.
So we need to hear him.
Are you not?
Okay. It's sometimes difficult. Yeah, the system's not great. Yeah.
It's systemic issues. The slide that we have there is a slide that shows the glaring inequalities in the country of all members that have raised, and we are raising it, and we would like to insist that any consideration of this bill should be centered around the transformation of this industry before we go into trying to fix things that were not necessary as urgent as transformation. Because effectively what you'll be saying, as I'll be telling you in the next slide, in the next couple of slides, let me not say the next one, you'll see the glaring favoritism or inclination of this to retain the status quo. The bill seeks to sterilize resources, focusing on imaginary instead of real risk. The intent of the bill is to tighten compliance to prevent a once-in-a-200-year event. This is in our view. I think also my fellow CEOs will...
I've got a problem. I can't follow the slides. When I listen to the presenter and look at the slides keep on changing on the board because something is wrong here.
The basis of fear of climate change
is fine. It's fine. Go ahead. It's fine. Just do what you want to do. Can members just allow people to speak? And, you know, we can change the slides, but you've got a hard text before you.
Am I sitting in the wrong place?
You have a hard text, really. They've got a copy. It's fine.
My apologies, I was sitting in a wrong place. Thank you.
Fine, I got a copy.
Copy you have before you. I can't see the screen, Tandi. My problem is I can't see the screen, so I always look at the text. Go ahead, please.
The basis of fear driving this change, that is the slide that I'm busy with at the moment. The bill seeks to sterilize resources, focusing on imaginary instead of real risk. The intent of the bill is to tighten compliance to prevent a once-in-a-200-year event. That is what I was saying. My fellow CEOs will raise this because one of the things that was raised was some pandemic that is perceived to be coming that requires you to raise your capital adequacy today. because there is a perceived pandemic that is Treasury is foreseeing. The next one will be the bill with increased systemic risk as it seeks to promote only big players. Systemic risk is not solved by pushing small players out of the industry, as the bill seeks to push small insurance companies, which are mostly black, out of the mainstream into microinsurance. Mm-hmm. There is one thing which my fellow CEOs will raise as well. It's a question of, if you were having one source of income that's personal, it's a serious risk, according to Treasury. That's so serious that you have to raise your adequacy. As of the next day, we're expecting to raise this by the 1st of July. I'm expecting, because this bill will be implemented not later than the 1st of July, as we understand. We already are running audits parallel to this. So this is why I'm saying this bill has already been implemented. Insurance and retirement funds traditionally always take second place to banking. Sheer common sense should dictate that the Reserve Bank will always give priority to banking. Regulations, insurance and retirement funds prudential will always come after bank. Moving insurance prudential from where it is a priority to where it is second best could never improve insurance prudential. It is our contention that the proposed move, which is almost complete, would create that situation where insurance becomes a secondary or a stepchild of the Reserve Bank. I'll tell you why we say that about the Reserve Bank. The ownership of the Reserve Bank, it's a well-known and a documented fact in this country. The private ownership of the Reserve Bank and its independence will mean that where the people have the entrusted parliament with responsibility over their savings in insurance and retirement funds, Parliament has outsourced those responsibilities to a party that they have no control over. As we know that the Reserve Bank is a private entity. Failure to protect consumers. The banking industry in South Africa is the best in the world, but does not mean that South Africans have the best banking services in the world. The Reserve Bank has regulated without due regard to the consumers. Why should it be given power to consumer savings created out of its domain? Failure to transform the banking industry. It's our contention, it's a matter to be debated, that the Reserve Bank is hostile to black banks. Banks, except for the VBS Bank, all homeland banks, some of which were acquired by black operators, were regulated to extinction. It's our contention that those banks do not exist because the Reserve Bank never held them. And you would imagine if the insurances were then to be held under the Reserve Bank, will they ever survive? Well, as I speak for the black insurers, I don't think we will survive. The bill should instead... The bill should instead open up financial services. Our submission is that Parliament has an opportunity to break down this interwoven, carefully crafted and well-executed exclusion strategy of black in the financial services sector by taking bold decisions. To submit that the current practice that the insurance companies in South Africa are compelled to use banks, auditing firms and actuarial firms that have been ring-fenced is not assisting the transformation agenda. That's what the other CEOs will speak for. You cannot, as an insurer, I'm talking as a black insurer, maybe other people are having comfort in this, you cannot save your money in any of the bank other than the big five. It's law in this country. If you wish, and you were born in Venda, maybe let me see, if you were born in Venda, you would prefer the VBS, you would not be able to, if you were an insurer, to save your money with VBS. And that's law. Decided. That's it. You will not be audited by any other auditing firm except the big four. The actuaries are determined. You cannot just walk into any actuary who works that you think is reasonable for your firm or at your level that you can afford. you have to take the one that is in the list. But these are unwritten rules.
The website.
Yeah, these are unwritten rules. If you were to start inquiring tomorrow, somebody might deny that this is how. But the practices, that's the practice today. The secrets around which service providers are to be used and what criteria has informed their preference is an affront to this parliament, because this is not legislated, but it's a standard practice. With the banking and the auditing sectors being controlled by a few white people in this country, this practice further hemorrhages any attempt to transform the financial services sector in this country. Instead, the bill should be in unambiguous and crystal clear language, championing the use by the insurance companies of emerging actuarial firms, emerging auditing firms, and even emerging banks. Let me rather jump this slide, because it's kind of repeating what we have said. Then we are proposing clear amendments, which probably I would also like to jump, so that at the time when the next hearing happens, we can come back with all of them. Yeah. That's March 14th, as I understand it. All the proposals that we have included here, I will jump them. The amendment. In the designation as a group, we will also leave that for the amendments on the 14th of March, and we would like to make a full submission on that matter. The macro insurance matter, we've already explained that our bone of contention on the matter of micro insurance and macro insurances, it's a South African coined, you know, typical apartheid coined concept, that you must find a playground for black and emerging people. Play there in the micro, because one day you will come and play here in the Premier League, or let me not call it the Premier League, but kind of the upper class where the rich and able are playing. We've raised the whole question of... Then we went to equality test of the bill. It's also a subject matter which was raised by the previous group. I will not delve into it, and I'll leave it for the committee to look at, and we will submit on the 14th of March further details on it. Then we have precedents on transformation. It's well known in this country that the Fishing Marine Living Resource Act, in the fishing industry, it exists, and it works towards helping the historically disadvantaged, that people who were living along the shores could not fish in their own waters, they had to be restricted. So we know about those laws that we believe is kind of an example of a progressive transformation act. We also have the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act. These are acts. But come to financial services, none has been put on the table to transform the industry. It remains an industry for the elite. Well, I think I'll jump the positive implications, because it also falls in the same. We were looking at, you know, like these projections, we may not be as accurate as we could be if this parliament and this house does not do anything in the next probably 75 years, when we make a centenary, would be probably at the pace that we're at, would be at 3%. That is our contention as this group. But we'll see this as unsustainable, and has got disastrous social and economic consequences for South Africa in the long term. And this would be the betrayal of the generations that came before us and died for this freedom, and also died trying to get transformation. I think we've in conclusion, some of my colleagues will conclude in this as you ask the question, but the fact of the matter is, if this bill were to be given effect as it is, in this format without the transforming objectives, it will shrink the ownership of black insurance companies to zero. It would be a monumental betrayal of the thousands of our martyrs who died for this freedom. I thank you.
Very much. The next submission is from a member of the public and petition parliament. And Mr. Sillius petitioned parliament, and then after consultation with the committee secretary, you will find his petition. It was decided that since we're looking at the insurance bill and you're proposing amendments, is that right, to the insurance bill, that you would appear before... Sorry?
No, I'm interrupting. They want to speak.
Oh, sorry, I hadn't realized.
Okay, sorry.
But thank you, want to speak now? Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm from NESLAF and part of the presentation that has just been tabled now. Mine really is just to emphasize a point that was made, because we do not want black insurers to be seen as if we are anti-regulation. We are not. What we are seeking is a fair regulatory system that will not marginalize emerging insurers. This bill before you, as it is, it has certain sections that not only would marginalize and wipe black companies, but it also flies against the spirit of our constitution, in particular Section 7, Subsection 2. I'll just quote one particular provision of this bill. It's Clause 7, Section 17. It says the Prudential Authority, Subsection A, they would have the power, taking terms of the Act, the consultation with the insurer controlling company. Subsection A says the Prudential Authority can direct that owner to reduce within a specified period of time the proportion of the voting rights or the interest held by that owner in the insurer or controlling company to a percentage specified by the Prudential Authority. It further says Prudential Authority can direct that owner to dispose of, within a specified period of time, the full interest held by that owner in the insurer or controlling company, directly or indirectly alone or with other related people. Simply taking it as it says, it means the 20 years that we've built a company, we can have the regulator coming in and saying, we're not happy with this situation, someone else must take over, which is very, very unconstitutional as it is put right now. And also, it is really, indeed, would be one sure way of reversing any bit of transformation that has been achieved in this sector. We are simply saying, right now, certain parts of this bill have been implemented, as my colleague has said. We're busy running a parallel process with a component of this bill called SEM, which is already putting serious strain on emerging companies. We're not anti-legislation, but we just seek fairness. And so we are appealing then to the committee to say this bill has to be taken back. Even the implementation of parts of this section, which is currently underway, should really be halted. Otherwise, this is going to reverse any bit of transformation that we've seen in this sector, and we'll never see it before.
Thanks. You're on 24 minutes. I'll give you some latitude, but go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kandana Msibi. I'm the Group CEO of Numsa Investment Company. We own Union Life, and I'm the chairman of Union Life. We're very much grateful to PGC for providing leadership on this subject. I just want to point out a few things here, that the financial services is an apex industry in the country, in that it has a bearing on all other industries, that the manner in which the insurance industry is regulated has an impact on shares in the JSE, on whether there's a private investment in real infrastructure in the country. If you were to look at some of the issues that we grapple with as a country, the so-called investment strike. The investment strike is not by manufacturing companies and mines, but by the financial services who are the holders of cash in the country. And they keep it in mostly a liquid assets. We have a situation where as a result of the manner in which we are regulated, we hold about 400 million rands of policyholders' funds that we have to keep in liquid form in the event that all the policyholders were to claim, which is an unrealistic situation, which is that once in a 200 years event that really does not happen when you have a country that has a rising unemployment and the resources are sterilized over an event that is imaginary at the best of time. The honorable member there, and if you can pardon me for pointing at him, I don't know his name, he raised the issue of a regulatory environment whereby the smaller insurance companies or black insurance companies are given less onerous regulatory terms. In fact, the opposite is true, in that we are given a more onerous regulatory requirements in comparison to the big companies. I have a practical experience of that. The car requirement for us when we acquired the license was made deliberately higher by the FSB because they said that they don't know us, right? And that was the reason that was given to us. So the opposite is true, that the smaller players are actually under much more pressure with regards to regulation. Would really appreciate an opportunity again on the 14th to provide much more details on how we think the industry must be regulated in the interest of the country and also in the interest of transformation.
We're done, PGC. Yeah, very quickly.
Last comment, perhaps. Treasure from Pillow Life. Just one point that perhaps has not been touched on. And it talks to the elements which are contained in the fit and proper elements of the bill. The licensing process of the FSB today is so onerous. It takes, just to give an example, in the last year alone, they only proudly said that they have approved only one short-term insurer of the many that they have had apply. And that just gives you an indication, when are we going to see the second one? And when are we going to see the first black? And when are we going to see the second black? Meanwhile, in this competition, the process in itself is following exactly what we just heard in fit and proper. All the things that sound so nice, all the things that sound so relevant, but when it's put in practice, I am an evidence of that. We took forever to end up with an insurance license. To an extent, I don't, wish it to any black company out there. Thank you.
Okay, the last input is from Mr. Silius. As I explained, it's a petition to Parliament. Frank, you'll help us a bit about how we process it, right? But we invited him to make a submission here because it deals with an amendment he's proposing to the legislation. Welcome, Mr. Silius. Over to you.
Thank you. I am Gerard Silius. I lodge a petition to change the long-term insurance bill. Thank you for the opportunity to present my case and convey my part of the story. Legislation should be there to protect the public, allowing financial institutions to market own occupation income to protect the products without a choice for whole life, leaves a professional person financially destitute if the individual cannot commence his or her own occupation due to medical constraints after the policy term has ceased. I therefore ask the Honourable Parliament to make the following changes in the Long-Term Insurance Act. A clause be created to make it mandatory for own occupation disability benefit cover to include a whole life option for current and new policies and to make this retroactive for previous policies at the option of affected policyholders. If policyholders exercise the option they have, insurance must make a lump sum payment to cover the difference between term premiums paid and whole life premiums that would have been charged if the policyholder were given a whole life option instead of having a term option only. Please see the following documentation presented to this committee, comments and remarks as part of the petition, to a letter from Old Mutual to show that the policy they sold me was a term policy only, and three changes made by Old Mutual in September 2012 to include the whole life option, and then a psychological report. Insurance companies should adhere to fair and just practice that owe a duty of good faith and fair dealing to the persons they insure. Without a whole life option for own occupation disability income protection policies, this is not the case. The Bill of Rights concludes, everyone has inherent dignity and the right to have their dignity respected and protected. Allowing institutions to market only term policies without a whole life option will eventually defile an individual's dignity when income ceases at the end of the term and left you financially destitute. As professional people, please put yourselves in my shoes. Then, this is what happened to me. I received a tertiary qualification in computer system analysis at UNISA in 1986. My life as a professional included computer and system analysis, building new systems and interfaces, and re-engineering of old systems to make them more effective. This is what I did on a daily basis until recurring migraines and that resulted in mini strokes put an end to that. I do not have any other qualification or work experience. I hope you can contemplate my hopelessness in the future without an income protector that I took out in good faith, without the faintest idea that it will put me in this predicament later in my life. I bought the old Mutual Greenlight Own Occupation Disability Benefit in 2003. The product was marketed by an old mutual financial advisor with a choice of 5 and 10 years period. According to the marketer, this was periods where a claim could be lodged against the policy. I'm going to repeat this because this is very important. According to the marketer, this was periods where a claim could be lodged against the policy. I bought the 10-year period. My neurologist forced me to resign my own occupation in March 2003 as a computer system analyst at Accenture Consulting. In March 2003, my neurologist commented the following where a claim was lost against the policy. It is therefore my recommendation that Mr. Salier should be declared medically unfit to commence with any computer work, seeing that this is really to the detriment of his health. This was the result of overexposure in front of the computer screen, where I spent all my time in front of a computer with recurring migraine attacks. My MRI scan on the 10th of February 2003 shows mini strokes due to overexposure on computers, which forced me to restrain from computers. A successful claim was lodged against the policy in 2003. To me and my wife's dismay and disbelief, Old Mutual informed me in March 2015 that my monthly income will cease because it reached the end of the 10-year cover date. It then came to light with correspondence to between myself and Old Mutual that the policy I bought was a term policy and not a whole life policy. Correspondence with Old Mutual also reveals that the policy I bought in 2003 did not have a whole life option choice. It was changed in September 2012 to have a whole life choice. Given the fact that I cannot commence with my own occupation, this policy left me and my dependents financially destitute. The financial devastating effect it has on policyholder later in life, if they cannot continue with their own occupation, make it unthinkable that legislation does not protect individuals from this kind of devious marketing and selling of insurance products. I herewith request for the policy I bought in 2003 considered to be unlawful, given the fact that Old Mutual sold me a term policy with devious marketing, but without an option of whole life. Legislation should also change and be backdated for all own occupation disability income protected policies to have a whole life choice. Legislation should be there to protect the public, not to have individuals with income protection policies to contemplate suicide later in life because the policy they bought is insufficient without a whole life option. To be in this situation at age 59, with an income and no prospect to return to my own occupation, and where I made provision to protect my income with an own occupation disability policy, is unfair practice and should be considered unlawful. The last 2 years was and still is hell. We are living on our capital where I sold our house in Gauteng for a profit. The idea was to buy a new home in Western Cape. Instead, we are renting a small apartment in Somerset West without any prospect to purchase a property. Our capital deplete on a monthly basis until there will be nothing left. It is also a fact that given my income and yearly increases as a computer system analyst with Accenture, my financial position would be far better today if I was in a situation to commence with my own occupation rather than be reliable on a monthly disability, which was 70% of my own occupation income in 2003. I'm putting me and my wife's lives in the hands of Parliament. Changing legislation to include a whole life option for current and past occupation disability income protected policies will put me in a position to reinstate my monthly income, which, as mentioned earlier, was 70% of the income I earned when I resigned from my own occupation. This income was just enough to service monthly obligations. I will pay Old Mutual as a lump sum the difference in monthly policy premiums with the risk and liability to pay any benefit lasting whole life instead of term. Lastly, in June 2015, an appeal was lodged with the Ombudsman, but with the current legislation as ruled in favour of Old Mutual on the 11th of November 2015. I thank you.
Questions for the last three submissions. Yes, Makosi, Floyd, Sifiso, and Pule.
Chair, if I'm out of order, rule me out of order, but I have to ask this question. I wasn't here in the morning. First of all, I wanted the PGC to clarify the two slides in two documents. In one slide, you have the market share of the historically disadvantaged being 1%, and in another you have 4.6%, and it's exactly the same slide. Now, I'm not too sure which one is the correct one. Secondly, I wanted to know if you consider it a good practice, given the fact that we've only been in power for only 20 years, that we will have Lloyd's underwriters being in the legislation in South Africa. Let's put aside its own global footprint. What's your own comment on that? Because if you look at all the things that they are covering, that means in future, it's like you are signed off. You will never have a black underwriter. That's my view. But what's your take on it being in the legislation? Is this another form of exclusion? Of exclusion of black players. Thank you.
Oh, you were next, were you?
Thank you, Chairperson. Look, the diagnosis of the BBC plus the four companies, black companies, is correct in terms of the lack of transformation in the entire insurance and asset management sector or industry. It's a correct diagnosis. Even the numbers are correct. So the 1% refers to the owners of insurance companies, that it's 1% historically disadvantaged, that in assets under management that are controlled by black asset managers, it's 4.6%. I think that is the distinction which is highlighted in their own presentation today. And that is correct, but I think that all of them are tiptoeing in terms of what should be the solutions. You're saying you want to say it on the 10th of March, but you can say it now. What do you want us to do? We've given you an opportunity and platform to tell us what do you want us to do in the transformation of the insurance and in the asset management sector. Even the things that you have written, they are not clear in terms of what exactly you want us to do as legislators. We are waiting for you. Industry has given concrete recommendations. The established industry has given concrete recommendations on what they want us to do. They actually are even saying that we must expedite the resolution, the adoption of this legislation. And you are not saying exactly what you want us to do. And I don't think that your solution is correct, the one which you're proposing about amendment of Section 17 of the insurance bill currently, because I think you must understand the context within which it says that the Prudential Regulatory Authority can deal with certain ownership shifting and everything else there. So the entire Prudential Regulatory Environment, Chair, is meant to prevent what is called the systemically important financial institutions from engaging in wrong management practices that can collapse the entire financial sector. So some of those interventions like necessarily have to happen. And I think that in the FSR bill, we had said that there's an appeal process that we can engage in to say that this has gone too much in terms of what should happen. So if you do not have that aspect of pre-intervention before a crisis, you will have the recurrence of a financial crisis that is caused by one financial institution because of their own mismanagement. So those issues are things that must be clarified maybe in a different platform. So I also must create a platform outside the here, Comrade Selo, to have deliberations around all of those issues. But I want to give a highlight on what could be some of the interventions which maybe we can propose to us when we come back on the 11th of March. I think that you must argue that under licensing, I think it's chapter 4 of the insurance bill, that the PRA is the one that gives licenses. Must make sure that at all material times, a minimum of 30% of licenses are in the hands of historically disadvantaged individuals. Minimum. So say 30%, you can say 50%, you can discuss amongst yourselves and say, what is the acceptable figure in a country where 80% of the population was legislated to be excluded from the economy. So you have to legislate them back into the economic participation. There is no other way. Those things of social contracts which the ANC did of transformation charters have not worked. They've dismally failed. And I think that all of us will accept that the social contracts in terms of the approach to transformation have dismally failed. Let's now move into a trajectory of legislating transformation. You can say that at all material times, a minimum of 30% of insurance license holders must be historically disadvantaged individuals. And two, you could say that the insurance holders must have a certain participation of black people or historically disadvantaged individuals, that if it's Liberty, if it's Discovery, that a certain component as a prerequisite, as a sine qua non for a license, there must be a certain percentage of black ownership. That is when you will then begin to move much more decisively. If you tiptoe around the transformation, which unfortunately includes de-racialization in this context, you're not going to achieve anything. If you pass the legislation in the manner in which it is now, you're just going to be reproducing what has been for a very long time. But also, there are so many transformative things that can be inserted there in terms of how those assets are managed and where are they invested and everything else. 8.5 trillion rands assets under management is quite a significant number and can play a decisive role in terms of how you constitute and give direction to the economy in South Africa and everything else. And there isn't much of a crisis. I mean, the biggest asset manager chair is the PIC in South Africa, and it's run by black people. So there is no crisis. Like, no one must ever think that, no, if you give this thing to black people, it's going to collapse. It won't collapse. It just needs political willingness and courage from the politicians, but also from the people who are coming to present that we have got a crisis of transformation. You must tell us what to do. We're giving you a platform to say that this is what you must legislate in. And in the process, we must not misread some of the issues in a way that will just complicate it differently. I think that perhaps a different platform to discuss that detail must be created so that maybe we then establish common ground on what should happen. Makosi will attend that platform outside of this.
Sipiso? Sipiso? You're on. Sipiso, I mean, really, it's your right to speak.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's very clear that moral suasion is not working in terms of transformation. We have seen that. So one would agree with a point of view which says we must legislate a transformation. We have got good experience to show that for the past 22 years, it has been more of moral suasion trying to appeal to the industry's consciousness to try and get to the party. So we need to transform. I think there is no debate about that. Chair, I think there's also a concern which is, keeps on coming up, that the industry has got this tendency of implementing things which are still not laws. It's not the first time that we are confronted with that type of a situation. We know that that was a problem again when we discussed the FICA bill, that the industry jumps. And by the way, what it means they are saying is that whether we like it or not, they'll continue and do what they want. So when these things come to us, it's more of us rubber stamping what they're already doing. I think it is a concern. I think we should find a way of addressing that. That today we're dealing with the insurance bill again. We hear that the industry is already implementing some of the things which are still not law. So they're acting out of the law, so to speak. That's what they are doing, because there is no law which allows them to do what they are doing. I think we'll have to deal with that. I asked CLA and they didn't respond. I said, before this bill comes here, the Treasury is supposed to be interacting with a lot of stakeholders and role players. So I said, have you interacted with Treasury and what has been your experience? But now I think the same goes to the black players in this industry. I would like to know that now, since there are all these things that you are proposing to us, what has been your experience with Treasury? Because whenever these bills comes to us, the assumptions, not just the assumptions, Treasury will tell us that we have been interacting with the players. And when I look at the things that you are raising, most of them, if not all, they are not incorporated anywhere in the bill that we are dealing with. So I think it's very important for us to understand that how is that interaction conducted by Treasury. Thank you, Chair.
And then Brendan.
No, thanks, Chair. I wanted to raise the point that Honorable Buthelezi has already spoken to. That it seems like this is just a window dressing exercise. You know, we are sitting here and talking when actually these things are already being implemented. So that would be a worry. There could be a need for us at some point to also, I mean, it means that if you say there are five big banks in the country, it means that the people of influence we need to be talking to are five CEOs of the banks. So it's not a big crowd. I mean, it's smaller than a soccer team, really. You know, so we just need to, at some point, engage with them so that they too are given an opportunity to reply. You know, because we can't only rely on one side of the story. You know, if we are to transform the financial sector space, like Honorable Shibambu is saying, and dealing with the asset management and making sure that there's a greater participation of Africans in the space, we need to first understand what is the cause of the problem so that we could play a meaningful role in unlocking. But to also just caution that in instances where we say things can't pass the constitutional muster or there are constitutional issues, we should be able to substantively refer to those. Because, you know, my worry is once you raise the issue of the constitution, it also got to do with our own integrity as parliamentarians. Because we take it that bills that are sitting before us, so that we don't have to be coming back and dealing with the issues. So we ought to make sure that these things, because it's coming up for the second time. I mean, in the first round it was human rights. Now it is coming back again, and I think the insurers are actually even citing a specific section. It is important that our lawyers at this level also begin to look at those issues even before we go far. But as a last point, I align myself with a point that was made earlier, that we need to at least be clarified on what needs to be done. You see, because you are in the industry, you are participating in the space, you know of the challenges and all of that. When you come to this level to make your presentations, you should be able to say, these are the things that you believe, when done, we could see the sector being transformed. As a side point, Chair, I mean, it's really worrying. I mean, the issue of the banking sector keeps on coming up, that they are, I mean, very interesting. They are using any one of them relies on information coming from the big four audit firms. I mean, which is Ernst & Young, Price, WaterCoopers, and I'm sure it's Deloitte, I'm sure it's those, KPMG, you know, and then when they are five. So actually it means that the financial services sector, if you like, we can sum it up like this, it is run by 9 companies, 4 audit firms and 5 banks. So what we do is, even in these bills, it's important that we also start inserting things that begin to empower your vendor banking society, your VBS, your Itala, you know, so that we could start to see the real transformation of the sector. Because if those that have been there forever only depend on us finding solutions through legislation, and not saying these are the measures that we are applying, there is no way that we will transform the sector. They should be saying that we have got this banking license ourselves. We initially started as insurers, but we are unable to enter the space because the regulations that allow us to enter the banking space are so onerous. Because if you don't do that and expect that will be done by the legislature, then I don't know. Then, I mean, it's another Martin Luther King. We have got a dream. We might not get there. So it's important that we come closer to reality. So all I'm advocating for, Chair, is that the industry as well must begin to put forward progressive views on what needs to be done, and views that are in line and consistent with the laws of the Republic. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not sure I quite understood Pooley's comments about the auditors running the financial industry. I think I'll have to understand that at another point in time, although they are major players for certain. I wanted to write a book once. It was entitled How to Raise Money in South Africa Without Selling Your Soul or Going to Jail. I gave up because it's impossible. And I think this is a problem in South Africa that's affecting transformation, but it affects the entire world. The bottom line is many of the biggest business empires and wealth in the world will not be recreated today anywhere in the world because of advanced regulation and the barriers to entry of time. So it's a problem more complex than just race in South Africa. It's got to do with time. And every year a business exists, its reserves build, etc., and the barriers to entry do become an issue. But that being said, we have to fix this problem. We have a serious problem. And I also want to ask for specific recommendations to us. What discount do you want on capital adequacy for the Prudential Authority to consider? What discounts do you want on annual fees? What extended reporting admin issues you want? What type of terms you want us to say, all right, your FD has got to be approved, but he can get the following processes, etc. Give us specifics. I also want to correct some maybe incorrect understanding. For instance, I 100% agree with you that 1% of the insurance industry is controlled by black people. But we must not misunderstand that that doesn't mean that only 1% of the insurers are owned by black people. And I think for the 14th of March, just like I've asked the Banking Association of South Africa, I think ASISA must come and also tell us what percentage of the insurers are held by what, you know, how many people, etc. So the PIC has 5% of all mutual or whatever the case might be. So we get a better idea, so we can measure it, the progress in the future. Because it's very easy to just look at 4 companies and say that's the whole financial sector. It's not necessarily the case. Also, I share your concerns of everybody's raised on the designated auditor and also maybe designated actuaries. Fortunately, we haven't got to the point that regulators want us to say who the attorneys are. And I think we must bear in mind that the court approves an attorney. IRBA approves auditors, etc. And I think over-regulation in this regard is probably what is hurting transformation of the professional services. It's okay for a regulator to work with Psycho or Irva, to have guidelines. But I think that the trend of saying that we want to approve the audit partner is definitely affecting the transformation in smaller practices in South Africa. And there another little error of misconception, should I say. In South Africa, we have an anomaly. It's probably the only one of the few countries in the world, if any, where there are big so-called black audit firms. Everywhere else in the world, you've got the big four. But in South Africa, because of the legislation we've already passed, we do have Gabodas and Sizwes and other firms that are actually playing in the financial sector, etc. But more can be done, and I think by telling the regulator back off on micromanaging the professions to allow for to make it slightly easier for smaller firms to gain experience and access, I think that's a good idea that we can do. And on that matter, PwC, and I acknowledge that the BEE processes in South Africa are wrong, is a level one BEE firm. So the largest auditing company in South Africa is by definition black audit firm. And that goes for the other big four as well. They are level one. I stand to be corrected, but I'll take it that. So we must just, you know, if we create legislation, which I think is wrong in certain aspects and how it works, my party feels that way, it's got to be improved. We can't then go and say, hang on, but the big four are all white-owned, for instance, which is incorrect. So we've got to correct that. Then on that question of reinsurance, previously I wanted to actually ask the FSB maybe to get SOT or the National Treasury to come back with somebody from SOT to just clarify the taxation. Because my understanding, actually, by this new provision, and what I'm reading from Munich Re state, is that currently a reinsurer can do reinsurance business outside of South Africa. That's what I understood. I could be wrong. The legislation is going to terminate this. I understand why. It's not going to terminate. You've got to get a permission or approval. And I understand that's because of the risk associated with our local business. But just so that we know, from a tax point of view, by actually terminating it, we would actually hamper the ability to recover taxes in South Africa on it. So it'll be actually better to allow it to happen, but it seems that we need to find a way to do it with to make that permission to be granted a little bit more easily, and not maybe, please sir, can we do business outside the country? Maybe, you know, to make it, you will give him permission provided the following is in place, etc. Then on Mr. Salias, he mentioned just out of interest that in 2003 his claim was approved, but they stopped paying in 2015. That's 12 years. So just out of interest why that happened. Secondly, if maybe Assis will have to come back to us on this. Obviously, what the insurance companies estimate such a retrospective legislation would cost the industry potentially. And was a whole life cover available, theoretically, if not on that policy at the time, in the country? And then I presume that wouldn't be something that we would legislate. That would be something that's currently handled by means of the regulations, etc. I mean, we don't micromanage it. And there was no FIAS wasn't effective in 2002, if I'm correct. It came probably later. So then the next question would be, it seems to be a very commercial concern, whether it was properly advised, etc. at the time. So the statement that there is no legislation to protect the consumer might have been true in 2002. If that type of situation happened today, the FIAS Act specifically would be protecting the consumers, and that's theoretically why we've gone to all this effort in the past, is to protect consumers such as Mr. Celia. It might not help him right now, but it helps prevent recurrence of bad professional advice in the future.
Tandi?
Chair, there has been a temptation to discuss policy matters that we have deferred to March the 14th, so I'm not going to make that mistake of getting into those issues that we have put a special day for discussion. I want to restrict myself to what we need to be doing here today. First, let me flag, based on the presentation of Mr. Cilliers, a discussion for the role of insurance brokers. so that when we deal generally with issues, we also look at the role of insurance brokers in how they cause any, the industry a headache. So we shall leave it for a later discussion. Secondly, and I want National Treasury to respond to this, the presentation said that Section 17 sub A has given the Prudential Authority powers to reduce voting rights of owners. I want us to look at that because it's been deemed as unconstitutional. You mentioned Section 17 sub A about the powers of the Prudential Authority, so I want us to put it to test because I want National Treasury to respond to that so that we look at that. But secondly, I want us to give us a list of all those clauses that you deem can be litigated or challenged in a court of law so that we can look at the constitutionality of those clauses. But, Chair, I also want to make a suggestion that we invite SARB to our March 14 meeting to discuss the issue of the investment strike that has been raised here today, that in relation to the liquidity of the financial sector, that's a big challenge. They need to address all other overarching concerns that has been raised. And then we'll also flag the licensing process that has been deemed as very onerous. So if there is the list, let's look at that so that when we start engaging on the legislation, we look into that. And at one point, we'll have to make a difference between matters that are regulations and matters that are legislative processes. Because the majority of the matters that are being raised are more of regulatory frameworks, not legislative framework, so that when we give the executive the homework to look at, because we'll put that in our report, in the committee report, but we should separate the legislative ones, because once we say the legislation is unconstitutional, we must then speak to the specific clauses that are unconstitutional, and that doesn't necessarily speak to the regulations. Least to have been taken to task for how we are drawing a comparison between the framework, the regulatory framework, and the legislative framework. So I hope we have taken that. When we respond, that we will take that into account. So we have noted the issues that has been raised that needs specific attention. And some of them will deal with them when we come to the March 14 discussion. So I hope you'll be present. I'm making that plea to clear the dials because it's going to be a very fundamental engagement because it will deal with the transmission agenda in the context of not only legislative process but how we regulate as government and the institutions that are going to utilize as tools to attain that. Thanks, Chair.
Very quickly, I mean, a lot of my questions are covered. Just very quickly, I mean, so much of politics, as we know, is about finding the right balances. And there's the issues of context, what parties call balance of forces, and overall strategy and tactics. So many of the things the PTC and BBC are asking, you can't resolve through legislation alone. It's a multi-pronged approach. And secondly, you can't just, as members have said, come here and appeal to legislation. You have to wage your own campaigns and struggles, ultimately. These things don't happen overnight. What you got in 1994 is no more than a framework to open up class and other struggles. So you can't just come here and make verbal presentations to us. You must do what you have to do, whatever that might be. The second thing to say is I would urge members, I would urge civil society stakeholders to really restrain yourselves from saying something is unconstitutional. For those of you who don't know, a bill cannot come through a cabinet process and to parliament without going through a whole lot of hoops of lawyers in Treasury and in the state law advisor. So no bill can be brought to this parliament without being constitutionally sound. And it's a state law advisor's office that must sign off on that. If there are differences about policy, it reduces the credibility of what you say if you say it's unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional. I find that very hard to believe that so much of this bill is unconstitutional. So I think I agree with those who say, show us in what sense which clause is unconstitutional. Why don't you say you disagree with it? It's inconsistent with the spirit and the overall aims of the Constitution, rather than saying each bill is like, you know, these bills take like, how many, 4 or 5 years to process. We've just had an example of the FICA bill last week. 5 lawyers all said the provision is constitutional. Do you really want to go through that process again? Let's just focus. Then it makes it's flippant, you know, like it also shows that the government doesn't know what it's doing. Somebody says you're questioning Parliament. If you really, then just, you know, to be quite frank, you have to come with an opinion. You can say you think someone's going to explain it, but then you must come with a constitutional opinion. None of us here is a constitutional lawyer. So I think let's focus on your concerns, and there are very many of them legitimate. But I think one should, I'm asking members to be slightly cautious and not conflate transformation and de-racialization. It could be argued, in terms of the majority party's view, that the bill is transformative in the sense that it's requiring far more intrusive regulation on the financial sector, the banks, I mean the insurance companies, to protect who ultimately? Who lost out in 2008? Why is our country experiencing 0.4% growth rates right now? It happened in the US, the greed of the bankers. The consequences have been devastating for the developing world. So I think one should be careful. This balance in creating space for African and blacks more generally is very important to the NDR, as we call it, let alone socialist goals. Floyd and I may disagree on that, it's fine. But the point is, at the same time, we have to protect the most vulnerable, the most disadvantaged. Finding that right balance changes over time. So I'm just saying that that is why the parlance we've been using, at least the chair of this committee, is we're talking of transformation, including deracialization. There's no guarantees if black people or African people assume hegemony or control, ownership of the insurance sector, if they're operating by the private market criteria that people all over the world do, or whatever skin color they are, you think in India it's any different, or in Brazil, right? So what I'm trying to say to members is just to ensure that we don't equate transformation with deracialization. Deracialization is the crucial part of transformation. And sometimes people use transformation to avoid dealing with deracialization. So we need to find the right balance. It's a mutually reinforcing, if you like, dialectical interaction that between the two points. Then I want to ask people to actually explain to me what is going on. Now, Reshma, I don't know if Momo's briefed you, but in this committee, we give you 5 minutes at the end. It's not fair to the stakeholders to reply in a pithy way. You can choose whoever's going to reply on behalf of your team. Then when we have your submission, right, within 2 weeks or so, your reply, we send it to the stakeholders just to alert you. And then you will have a chance to reply. I note your hand, but I'm trying to finish. Then the next thing I want to say is that I agree that social contracts are not enough, but they have a role to play in my view. It's about ensuring they're implemented. I want to alert members that on the 15th, is it, we've got public hearings here on the rotation of auditors and the transformation and deracialization of the auditing profession. So that's another set of issues that some of you may want to have a hand in. Then I want to just draw your attention to this. I don't understand what is being said. Maybe Reshma and FSB, you can reply. What is being said that the bill is being implemented? I know you are preparing to implement the bill, but are there regulations being passed in terms of this bill, or are the regulations being passed in terms of the existing legislation? And if the regulations being passed in terms of the existing legislation undermines what is being proposed, then it's obviously wrong. You can't do that. So we want some reply to that. The final thing to say is that Mr. Silius, Mr. Jenkins is our lawyer, is gone. I don't know what we do, but I agree with many of the concerns that underlie his questions, Brendan's questions. The one thing that I don't have a lawyer here, we don't have a lawyer here, but I would imagine you cannot retrospectively pass legislation, the constitutional and other restraints on this easily. Secondly, You've gone to the ombudsperson, the highest authority. Parliament cannot prescribe on a specific matter. In a situation where the ombuds already, the parliament provided legislation for the ombuds. So what I would suggest is here's Asisa here, any other actor from the private sector, Mr. Jonathan Dixon and yourself meet over lunch here. Now we're having a lunch break at 13:30 if all goes well, and take this thing forward. But I'm not sure that, you know, we can address your specific concern for the past and your concern. But you see, the example you're referring to may have relevance. As you said, it's already been introduced to the fire bill and so on. So we look at you coming with a concrete amendment. It's maybe a very sorrowful thing for you. We can't do much for you. But at least you'll have the consolation that whoever else is in a similar situation will not have to bear the consequences you claim you've had to. That is my tentative fear. I'm not a lawyer. We have to process this matter just like any other matter before Parliament. Any South African citizen can petition Parliament. There are rules and regulations, and we have to abide by the procedure. So we're not dismissing you. Unfortunately, Advocate Jenkins has a meeting with the other committee. Having said that, can we have Floyd very quickly and then move on to giving a chance?
Yeah, now I was thinking, Chair, that if the people who presented today, particularly CISA and SAIA and the four companies, could have another opportunity. Perhaps they must give us an input on what do they think should be done within the current legislation on the question of de-racialization and transformation. Just want to hear what will be Sayers' views and whether they are comfortable with the status quo or whether there are these concrete legislative measures which they can propose to then deal with the de-racialization question as well. Must not insignify it. It's a very important component of it. And also those who are playing, like the 1% component of the insurance industry, must tell us what do we do, what else do we do, as concrete proposals so that we can look into it as part of the submissions.
In fact, when I was summarizing, you know, a similar thing, if we had the time, I was going to go back to Asisa and so on. And in fact, what I'm asking, because we are where we are, and because we're only going to come back to this in April, I want to suggest we extend the meeting for an extra 15 minutes. You can't have your cake and eat it, to allow them to speak. I would prefer that we do it now, in a pithy 2-3 minute response from the industry, the power holders in the industry. Having said that, let's move quickly to who came first. It was BBC. Where are you? Mr. Selo Rasataba had to go to a meeting. I think there's a meeting of business people and the presidency. Okay, so that's over. Is anyone else from BBC here? No. Nobody. All right, PGC Group.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just keen to respond to Honorable Shibambo here on the direct question that you put to us in terms of what do you want this House to do. There's a simple position to it. In fact, we will not even go back to many things that we've raised, to which we've now been accorded an opportunity to bring back in detail for discussion, which we are going to do. And we should take responsibility that perhaps we've not been sort of proactive in engaging with this House. And going forward, it certainly will be. But there are two things. One, we already have an implementation of part of the components of this bill. I alluded to that earlier on. If we have to submit a statutory return, it also does touch on what will be the position in the future. And I have a problem that if it's not law already, and yet I have to be dealing with it right now in a manner that is challenging, is that correct procedure from Treasury? That's one question. And if it's not, I would plead with this House that on behalf of the industry players, can a consideration then be made in engaging with the regulator on how that can be dealt with appropriately in terms of suspension the implementation without causing disruption in the industry. Remember, we emphasize the fact that we are not anti-regulation, we just seek fairness, and what is currently happening is putting a lot of strain on us. That also answers the question raised by Honorable Buthelezi. And I hope if that can just be addressed, it can go a long way in advancing the positions that we have put forward.
Is there anybody else from PGC?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
To further augment this question that Mr. Honorable Sivam raised, is that we did not gather as a four black insurance companies to find a way in which we can enhance our standing in the industry. But we gathered in order to protect what we saw as an attack in our participation in the industry. And that was the driving motive in terms of saying we don't want to be micro-insurers. We are insurers. We are like standing in front of our clients and say we have the same license as Old Mutual and Sanlam, and I don't want that to be taken away under the pretext of a change in regulatory framework. And that was the major view that we carried, the major message that we carried to this House. And we love the opportunity to go back and look at what measures can be looked at in terms of transforming the industry. But we'd like to emphasize that we're not BE players. We are in the insurance industry, but we are owners of insurance companies, and that must not be taken away from us. Thank you.
The question which was raised by Honorable Tennis was on our interaction with Treasury. In fact, we call each other by first name with a gentleman from Treasury. We know each other. We've met on several occasions. I think, as I speak for PGC, I have raised these issues. And guys, aren't you overstepping your authority by wanting to run these businesses remotely from your offices? It's a fact. They know about it. We've spoken about it. And until we had, in the close of business, 2016, on the 15th of December, when the whole of South Africa was closing down, there were these submissions. By default, we found out that there were these submissions to be made here. By people that we meet on a regular basis, they did not tell us about this one. This we picked up were just on the lines. So this is the kind of relationship that we have with them. And that was the one. Maybe the other issues I'll leave him. About the Lloyd's of London, the Lloyd's reference here. The British Empire never left South Africa. Maybe that should be the answer I leave to you guys. It's still here.
Anybody else?
Thank you. to respond to Honorable Shibambu's question, and I think perhaps it's not a question, it was more a comment that as the players, we need to stop tiptoeing and basically have a predetermined direction at dealing with these issues. And I think at this forum or this gathering, I'm unable to give the full details, but we have been provided, and thanks to that opportunity, to do so at the next gathering. But I'll give some indicative elements where the bill can address our concerns. And initially, I'll talk to the cost drivers. I think as a black insurer, if you look at my financial statements, I can tick off things that I tell you can easily drop me and the next guy like me. And those are audit fees. Those are actuarial fees. These are fees that the regulator sets as basically minimum, indirectly. And I give you how. So if you tell me you have accredited the following five can easily go and have coffee together and agree that we are not charging this guy less than 100,000. Simple. I don't know that, but any door I knock, I am never charged less than 100,000, just to paint the picture. Similarly with actuarial fees, and we know the resources are scarce and very expensive. And I think the other element, although it's a little bit far-fetched, it does talk to the element of reinsurance. Most of our businesses, especially where we perceive it to be high-risk business and significant in size, we tend to reinsure. Well, reinsurance, you do so for multiple reasons. But where we are now going, we have seen, for instance, regulations which tends to dictate the quality of reinsurance. And that sounds all good, but what that does in hindsight is it forces, you know, the big players, the good players, the expensive players only to play in the market. And I mean, just to quote an example where the FSB now says, unless your country is regulated basically like Europe, like South Africa, to be in this regime that we are moving into, you are not allowed to practice in South Africa. Now, that does away with all the costs. The reinsurers are forced to keep as much capital as possible. That forces us, you know, they pass that cost down to us. We eventually have to pass it down to the policyholders, but it squeezes our ability to progress. So again, I'm not giving exact numbers of, you know, where they should, what they should do exactly, but these are the cost drivers that we're suffering from. The other dimension I want to touch on is the terms and conditions that are basically forced down a new player. An example, if you were to have 15 million today and you wanted a short-term insurance license, the FSB will take that money as part of the application process. You have not yet started it. Take that money, put it somewhere else, and safeguard it. So they'll make sure that it's in the hands of the few people that can have been nominated by them that you pick from the list, basically, to safeguard it. It will destroy your interest. It will destroy all sorts of elements where 15 million you could make a good use of. And we're talking about a startup now. So such conditions can simply be removed, and we are able to progress. Fit and proper requirements. You know, to set up an insurance entity today or in the perceived future setup, you will need basically a team half the number of people who are here, of professional resources, of skilled consultants, auditors, and so on, just to be perceived to be fit and proper so that you are able to execute your function. I think that is an overkill. We have initially introduced our program by saying that South Africa is well regulated. South African insurance sector works. We are one of the, amongst the best in the world. Nothing is broken here. So these things are definitely an overkill, especially when you think about elements of prioritization. If this is not a priority, why are we making it a priority, which is in which case we're doing? And the other element is, you know, micro insurance has been proposed to be a standalone, which we say now you are clearly relegating basically black business into a lower league. What we are saying here, very simple, do away with that, incorporate it into the mainstream, and allow progression. So if I'm a black guy who goes out in Soweto as an example, and I go and start a funeral parlor, and I'm licensed to go and write funeral business, etc., and so on, I should be able to progress right until life business and start insuring property and so on and so forth. I am an insurer after all. I'm capable of that. I just need growth, because then, you know, I'm able to start as a parlor because I can do that in my house. But then I can't be immediately a life insurer, but don't relegate me. Don't make now a separate bills to address this. And last but not least, no, it's actually second last point, is that application process, you know, the licensing process as we speak, you would put that 15 million example I gave today, and you'll be told a year later, we are waiting for an approval process by somebody else who is not the final person, who is not the final ultimate person. Now, you can imagine that there's so many signatures, some of which, when you interrogate it further, you wonder, in fact, why are these necessary? In fact, yeah, even to propose a secondary element would be good for the FSB to come and put before this committee, what are their licensing protocols? What do people have to go through to actually get a license? And we can all see how long that is, some things that we can knock down. We will come with a proposal countering that. And the other element, and we can't really shy away from it, is that black business need support, and black business needs funds, whether it's a man in the street, whether it's an existing business. And these are simple rules to put together, just like you can set up a rule, as correctly pointed by Shibambu, that you can simply say 30% of it. Honorable Shibambu, my apologies. just like he correctly said, that you can simply put a rule that says 50% of all insurance licenses must be in black hands, black men's hands or women. Such rules can equally be put on important funds. I'm going to give you an example. You know, we talk of workers' fund, people who are typically black people, miners, for instance. These business as we speak, most of these group schemes, we call them group schemes because it's a group of people participating in, into a fund. Most of that money is still sitting in white-owned companies. The FSB has the duty to approve some of these. As Jonathan, Honorable Jonathan has correctly said earlier. Okay, he's not honorable. All right, Jonathan. As he has hinted earlier on that he, you know, when a book of business or there's a significant change in the risk profile and that risk profile requires an approver, they get to see these things. If we put rules on the table, guys, we know in South Africa there's so many funds, these are the sizes, we want 40%, we want 50% in black hands, done. Thank you very much.
Sir, your quick reply to the issues raised in the second half of the hearings.
Honourable Chair and members, thank you. Just insofar as the transformation issues are concerned, we are indeed preparing to address this committee on the 14th of March, so we will have a comprehensive presentation and look forward to that discussion. Insofar as Honourable Shivambu's suggestion that we should be working together with the likes of the four gentlemen who have presented here, I must say we found their presentation very interesting. We would be very happy to do that. In fact, we welcome smaller players. We do have special rules at ASISA that our members, regardless of the size of the membership, are treated equally so that we don't have the big players crowding out, as it were, the voices of the smaller players. And we also have a principle that even if a particular view that we put forward is a majority view, we have a rule that we will always express minority views where not everybody agrees with it. There might be a smaller group of people who have a different view, and we will always put that forward in all of our submissions to the authorities when we're commenting on legislation. When the insurance bill came out, we in fact sent a notice to all of our members inviting them to please come and join us in the construction of our submission, to make written submissions. We have workshops. In fact, one of the gentlemen, the Workers' Life, is in fact a member of ASISA, and we'd be very happy if they would indeed get involved with our committees and work with us to help enrich our submissions and our understandings of the issues that in fact this sector is going through. Because if we don't hear about it, if we don't understand the issues, then our submissions cannot cover these points. So thank you. It's been very interesting.
Sahir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, in response to Honourable Shivambu's question about ownership and your chairs yourself around the ownership versus control of the sector, it is not true that 1% of the industry is owned by black hands. It could be that there's 1% of 100% black-owned businesses, but in terms of the latest figures that we have, it shows shortly in the short-term space, there's 23% black ownership of the sector through various mechanisms. So even your big companies, your Santa, all of those have...
23. That includes the institutional investors like PIC.
Yes.
All right.
So there is... Black people do own, even your sometimes your mutual and federals, they do have black ownership. So as a sector, we are committed, and I know with these questions about the BEE legislation and the social compact, but something that will come up, I know, on the 14th of March, but We are in the process of, and hopefully we had hoped it would have been in place by now, that the new sector code, which does have far more stringent requirements, far more stringent targets, would have been in place. We are still debating between ourselves and the DTI and the new BE commissioner as to finalizing that, so fingers crossed it will happen soon. We hoped it would have happened in October already, but it hasn't. So we have set ourselves very strict targets as to what we want to do in terms of the sector and what we want to achieve from an ownership perspective, from a financial inclusion perspective. We all have targets. We have inclusion targets. We have what we call access standards that talks to the way product should be looked and developed for this particular market, from procurement targets. And when we do the presentation on the 14th of March, we'll come with figures as to how much money is going into black-owned suppliers' hands and those sort of things.
I suggest that the 14th of March, I'm not sure, you know, people, like, you know, it's like the way everybody's investing in the 14th of March. Firstly, it's not going to be done in one public hearing is what I think. So the 14th of March is the beginning of a new phase, right? Looking at the sector as a whole. So I think we will have more hearings related to that, which is a point that relates to when can we look at this bill. Because I suspect we'll have to have at least three public hearing sittings all day. 14th, if all goes well, unless the parliamentary program changes, we're going to sit all day. Can you apply for the permission? The second thing to say is, as far as this bill is concerned, we would like everybody, not least those of you who made concrete amendments, having heard what's happened here, to make concrete submissions. There is no hurry because we're not going to look at this bill until the second quarter of this year, which is April at the earliest. Right? What I would recommend to you is to begin preparing, but wait for the public hearings to emerge because you'll get a better feel and sense of what the range of issues are and what comes out of the hearings that is relevant to this bill. So you can start preparing, but do you really want to submit to us now? So I'm not going to say, colleagues, 14 days. They must submit it 7 days before the next sitting on this bill. Okay? So, Reshma, I'm going to give you 5 minutes and between you and your team to reply, and then we're going to close up. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks very much to the members as well as all of the representatives from various parts of the industry who made their submissions today. I think it was very constructive input. It's very clear to us as Treasury that the transformation issues as it relates to the bill as well is a priority and it requires a review. We look forward to the engagements on the 14th of March on this particular issue. I just want to touch on the consultation process as well, I think it's a broader issue, Chair, because I think from our side, you know, once Cabinet approves the bill, there's a public consultation process. You know, I think it's how far do we go in terms of consulting. You know, I think when we get to this stage of the committee hearings as well, we would have hoped that the parties making submissions here also approach the Treasury and we can actually have those active engagements and iron out these issues before we get here. So, but nevertheless, I mean, I think from the Treasury side, we definitely are open to engaging. We welcome the constructive input. We will definitely be responding to all of the oral presentations as well as the written presentations that have been submitted to the committee as we go down the line. But I think there are a few other issues, Chair, that you raised regarding the dual reporting that's already implemented, and I'd like Jonathan to perhaps explain the thinking around that as well.
Thanks, Chair. Very quickly. So with respect to that question, and I think to go back to basics in a sense, the legislation has been introduced to address current problems. So the one problem is around our prudential framework, our financial soundness framework. We know there are problems with the system, and we have had insurance failures which have resulted in policyholders losing money. So a big part of the bill is to better protect policyholders by introducing a solvency system, which is a forward-looking system, identifies risks ahead of time and prepares for that. So So insurers have been asked to prepare for the implementation of SAM, and that's why we have a parallel run process, so that there's not like a sudden, you know, that, so that there's a smooth transition, not a sudden stop from one system to the other. But it's also because by doing certain quantitative and qualitative things in terms of SAM, it means insurers go through the process of themselves thinking about what are the potential risks that are coming down the line so that they can be better protected. One of the failures we recently had in the system, I think if we had had SAM, we would have been much better protected. The second problem that we need to fix in the bill is the financial inclusion problem, and that's why we've introduced the microinsurance framework, which allows for new entrants. But that's, you know, that's only one mechanism, and we're definitely not forcing anyone to become a microinsurer. The other important part is, and it's in the bill, it says we have to implement all of these requirements in a proportionate way, which means proportionate relative to the size and the risks of the insurer. And I think we do need to focus a bit on that, particularly with the submissions we got from the four companies today. We have had a process. This framework's been developed over the last 7 years. So we've had consultation along the way, and what the FSB and the Treasury asked is that we focus on how do we do it in a proportionate way. I don't think we've got it 100% right. So if there is opportunity to improve it, I think we should look at ways to improve it. But I think also recognizing that when we talk about inclusion and transformation, I think the point has to be made, does the bill properly address the deracialization aspect? I agree. I don't think it does, and that more needs to be done on that. And I speak fully mandated by the FSB and the executive officer of the FSB to say the FSB is fully behind transformation and deracialization of the insurance sector. It's a big problem. It's something that the FSB has been frustrated with for some time in terms of the progress. You know, there's limits. It's somewhat limited by the regulatory framework, and this is an opportunity, I think, to change that, and we would be very interested in engaging on suggestions on how to do that. But I guess just bearing in mind that it shouldn't be in a way where the regulator is being asked to reduce or undermine policyholder protection, because I think that remains the job of the regulator, is to protect policyholders. So we have to bring about proper transformation in a way that we recognize the regulator's mandate to protect policyholders, and we, I think, would be very interested in finding a way forward on that.
So I think, but you should also bear in mind that some people argue that this becomes an excuse to prevent deracialization, that we're protecting the policyholder. What I think the committee might want to do is look at the balances between the two and how the one can reinforce the other. Having said that, what we're going to do, to remind you, is we will notify you about 10 days before the next hearing and, you know, the procedure. The second thing to say, I would suggest with bills, what we've done is because we don't have the capacity, right? Previously, I would go to these negotiations between a department and civil society stakeholders, and we invite opposition members to come. It's just impossible, actually. Impossible for me, you know, to do it. So what we have done in this era, 2014 onwards, is we've told you, meet Treasury. Meet with them. You've got, look, the budget is preoccupying you, so you're busy for the next 3 weeks or so. But remember, you've got at least another 6 to 8 weeks before we come back to this. We would strongly recommend that you meet with all the stakeholders here. You bring all of them together at some stage, meet them in parallel, listen to what members have said and what they have said, right? And try to see whether you can bridge the gap. Ultimately, it's Parliament's decision about whether you've bridged the gap enough. Ultimately, it's Parliament's decision of finding the right balance is what you're saying. The other thing I should alert people
is to say that this is a bill of cabinet. It's not a bill of treasury, really. It's a treasury bill. They take it to cabinet. Every cabinet member is co-responsible for the bill legally and constitutionally. Since you love using the word constitutional, colleagues, constitutional. So I know people like settling scores with treasury. Treasury's got a lot to answer for. But you know what? Once a bill goes through cabinet, it's the government's bill. Really. That's all I think is fair to say. Finally, I'm pleading once again to members. Tomorrow we are meeting, I'll switch this off. So that can we thank everybody for their cooperation, and we'll take matters forward. Thank you indeed.